some external forces meddled with Hong Kong affairs and carried out in the city activities undermining China's national security.
Beijing's Hong Kong representative takes a very hard line. This is Tuesday, May 26th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. From Israel comes word of previously undisclosed cyber spying. Researchers in Thailand work on a COVID-19 vaccine for the underdeveloped world. While the United States struggles against the coronavirus, Australia opens many of its schools. It is all on today's VOA Asia. China's Foreign Ministry Office in Hong Kong said Monday some actions during last year's pro-democracy protest were terrorist in nature and troublemakers colluding with foreign forces. Xi Feng, the commissioner of China's Ministry of Foreign Affairs in Hong Kong, made his remarks during a speech on proposed national security legislation in Hong Kong.
Because of the obstruction by anti-China troublemakers in the city and external hostile forces, the legislation required by Article 23 of the Basic Law is yet to materialize, 23 years after Hong Kong's return. To make things worse, some external forces meddled with Hong Kong affairs and carried out in the city activities undermining China's national security. All these have severely challenged the red line of one country, two systems, undermined the political and public security in Hong Kong, and threatened China's national sovereignty, unity, and territorial integrity. They have posed a major and imminent danger to China's national security.
The proposed legislation, which could also see Chinese intelligence agencies set up bases in one of the world's biggest financial hubs, sent Hong Kong's stock market tumbling last week and drew condemnation from Western governments. In Washington, speaking to reporters, National Security Advisor Robert O'Brien said the administration opposed China's proposed national security law that would ban secessionist and subversive activity as well as foreign interference in Hong Kong.
We strongly encourage China, the mainland China, not to impose this law on Hong Kong. If they do, I can't see Hong Kong remaining an Asian financial center the way it has been for many, many years.
Workers were cleaning up the main protest area in Hong Kong Monday morning after thousands took to the streets at Causeway Bay to protest Beijing's plans. Police say they arrested more than 180 people on Sunday when authorities fired tear gas and water cannon to disperse anti-government protesters as unrest returned to the Chinese-ruled city after months of relative calm. We invite you to read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the voanews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at voanews.com. Japan lifts the state of emergency for Tokyo and four neighboring prefectures. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo hails the temporary Eid ceasefire in Afghanistan. Thailand plans to boost domestic tourism in the third quarter as the coronavirus pandemic hits global travel and domestic consumption. India's crude oil processing in April slumped by 28.8% from a year earlier. Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte gives his government a week to process some 24,000 repatriated Filipino workers stuck for weeks on cruise ships or in coronavirus quarantine so that they can finally go home. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. Cyber attacks have been flying fast and furious around the world during these days of global uncertainty because of the coronavirus. Countries like China and the United States are accusing each other of engaging in cyber warfare, and each of the accused is also claiming to be a cyber victim. Linda Gradstein reports for VOA from Tel Aviv, Israel, where many of these cyber links have been uncovered.
The Israeli company Checkpoint, one of the world's leading cybersecurity firms, was founded by three men who did their military service together. Checkpoint recently uncovered a wide-ranging Chinese espionage operation called Nikon, which hacked government agencies all over Southeast Asia.
We detected this attack for years, but we were able to connect the dots and see that the whole picture. And by connecting the dots, we saw that attacks that we were able to detect somewhere else are connected to attacks that we see nowadays. And this is also the work of threat intelligence to say all these sparse attacks are part of one campaign that is running for years.
State-sponsored Chinese hackers have also been accused of attempting to steal information from the U.S., most recently data related to coronavirus vaccine research. The Chinese government rejected these charges.
China is an example for the way countries are using cyber attacks. And China is using it mainly to steal intellectual property. Recent example for the way China has been operating in the cyber domain just came a few days ago when the FBI said that he's investigating a hack of China against health organizations around the U.S.
The World Health Organization also reported more than double the number of hacking attempts against its computers and warned that cyber attacks are likely to increase even more as the entire world rushes to try to find a coronavirus vaccine. Linda Gradstein for VOA News, Tel Aviv.
Thai medical researchers are working on a vaccine for a new coronavirus that, if effective, could be the key to protecting millions of people across South and Southeast Asia from infection. A Bangkok-based research center has an agreement in principle to supply their vaccine to authorities in seven countries, as well as Thailand, if it works. Co-developing with the University of Pennsylvania in the United States, researchers from Chulalongkorn University's Vaccine Research Center began work shortly after Chinese scientists sequenced the genome of COVID-19. The director of the Chula Research Center, Dr. Kiat Ruxrantham, on Monday talked about the impetus for the research.
Our dream, I think it's most low-middle-income countries, that we should not stay as a buyer for the whole life. We have to make our own, you know, either technology or co-develop the technology and even, you know, produce the vaccine for other parts of the world as well. I think more importantly than money is to make sure the vaccine access to people that need it, desperately need it. And many vaccines right now is still expensive for poor country.
If results are good, researchers are aiming to begin human clinical phase 1 testing by October. Happening now in Asia, China's foreign minister is dismissing claims that the country is exploiting the coronavirus outbreak to expand its footprint in the South China Sea, labeling such accusations sheer nonsense. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. There are now over 5.3 million reported cases of the coronavirus globally and more than 335,000 deaths as a result of infection. The United States is the country with the most reported infections. As VOA's Kane Farabar reports, the country is noting a somber milestone amid a push to reopen businesses and churches in a bid to return the economy and daily life to some sense of normalcy.
While visitors pack some U.S. beaches amid limited easing of lockdown restrictions in most parts of the country, the head of the White House Coronavirus Task Force, Dr. Deborah Birx, warned it was still anything but a normal American Memorial Day holiday weekend.
You don't know who's infected, and so we really want to be clear all the time that social distancing is absolutely critical. And if you can't social distance and you're outside, you must wear a mask.
The number of U.S. coronavirus deaths approached 100,000, a benchmark the New York Times newspaper marked with a full front page dedicated to listing the names of many of the victims from each state to date. The milestone comes as President Trump presses states to allow religious centers to reopen.
Today I'm identifying houses of worship, churches, synagogue, and mosques as essential places that provide essential services.
It was a welcome move for Dan Carroll, pastor of Water of Life Community Church in Fontana, California, where Gavin Newsom is governor.
We don't want to break the law. We're prepared to go ahead no matter what President Trump had said or Governor Newsom, because we felt like we've been very patient, we've been very diligent, and we needed to open up and take care of our people.
The governors need to do the right thing and allow these very important essential places of faith to open right now. For this weekend. If they don't do it, I will override the governors.
But despite the directive, some congregations that have already attempted to conduct in-person services were exposed to those infected with the coronavirus, including a center in Northern California.
Certainly worshiping outside, maintaining social distancing, and, you know, obviously not having physical contact with each other. And that's, I know that's difficult. We all have made difficult behavioral changes, and that needs to continue to happen.
As more parts of the country begin efforts to reopen restaurants and businesses in an attempt to regain economic losses as a result of the coronavirus lockdown, Dr. Birx says the United States is also preparing for a second wave of the virus later this year.
We are preparing for that potential fall issue, both in PPE, which is protective devices, both in ventilator stockpiles, and ensuring that we're really pushing on therapeutics and vaccine development so we can be ready if the virus does come back in a significant way.
If the virus does come back, President Trump has publicly stated he does not plan to enact the same restrictions or shut down the U.S. economy again, despite the risks of spreading the virus. Kane Fairbaugh, VOA News.
After you listen to VOA Asia, see it. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free and see us often on VOA Asia YouTube.
This news from VOA Asia. China warned on Monday that it will take countermeasures if the United States insists on undermining its interests regarding Hong Kong, following the latest comments from Washington about possible sanctions over new national security legislation for the city. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Schools in Australia's most populous state have reopened after weeks of a COVID-19 lockdown. Students in New South Wales, along with those in Queensland, have headed back to class in one of the most significant easing of coronavirus restrictions. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Gradually, life in Australia is coming to resemble what it was before COVID-19. In just over a week's time, up to 50 people will be allowed into bars, cafes and restaurants in Sydney, the biggest city in the country. It's not a return to normal just yet, though. Each person must have at least 4 square metres of space. Patrons won't be permitted to stand, mingle or dance. Currently, venues are allowed to host up to 10 diners. Authorities in New South Wales say a further relaxation of the regulations on June 1 is a big step in the state's economic recovery from the new coronavirus. State Premier Gladys Berejiklian.
This will be with very strict guidelines in place. It has to be in adherence to the 4 square metre rule. So some venues are small in space. They will only be able to have as many customers as is allowed in that space according to the 4 square metre rule. And nobody will be able to take bookings of more than 10 people. Nobody will be able to be standing up in these venues. You have to be seated at a table, even if it's a pub.
Other states and territories in Australia's federated system have different approaches to winding back lockdown restrictions. In South Australia, pubs can serve food to up to 20 diners, 10 insides and 10 more outsides. In the state of Victoria, authorities are taking a phased approach to reopening the hospitality industry. By mid-July, up to 100 people are to be permitted to eat at a cafe or restaurant. In Western Australia, public swimming pools, libraries and places of worship can reopen under strict distancing and hygiene regulations. Easing disease controls will boost the Australian economy, which is facing its biggest contraction ever because of the COVID-19 crisis. An administrative bungle has forced the federal government to revise a historic economic rescue package announced in March. Officials had said mammoth wage subsidies would keep 6.5 million Australians in work during lockdowns. They now say mistakes in applications from businesses mean the scheme will now cover 3.5 million workers, cutting the cost from $85 billion to $45 billion. Opposition Labor leader Anthony Albanese says it's an embarrassing error.
This is a mistake you could have seen from space. And this is a government that couldn't run a bath. How about someone in this government accept responsibility just once?
Just over 7,000 confirmed coronavirus cases have been recorded in Australia since the disease was first reported here in late January. 101 people have died. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Trees were uprooted, buildings were damaged, tens of thousands of homes and businesses lost power as a vast stretch of the Western Australian coast was battered by a severe storm Monday for the second straight day. No casualties have so far been reported. Brad Santos of the Bureau of Meteorology described the storm as a rare event for Western Australia.
It certainly was a very rare event for WA because of the large area affected and the areas which were experiencing dangerous weather conditions. So it's certainly not typical weather for this time of year. It's somewhat comparable to an event we had back in 2012 where a tropical system interacted with a cold front to produce severe weather over large parts of WA.
The storm was subsiding by Monday afternoon.
How dangerous is COVID-19? 80% of the cases are said to be mild. Young and healthy people are at a relatively low risk. Elderly and people with serious health conditions are at risk of fatality. If you have a cough, fever, and shortness of breath, contact a doctor and stay away from other people. For more information, visit the websites at the World Health Organization and the U.S. Centers for Disease and Control. A message from your friends at VOA Asia.
The global pandemic is causing major anxiety for many. Some are finding treatment via online therapy. More from Deanna Mitchell.
The COVID-19 pandemic has shuttered in-person therapy sessions and forced some people facing unemployment and other stressors online for help.
I was on a Zoom call with about, I think like 30 of us, and the head of the agency let everybody go on the Zoom call. Super traumatizing.
I was kind of like, I think I might need to see someone based on my anxiety levels. I'm not able to self-regulate as much as I normally am.
Almost half of adults in the United States reported worry and stress because the virus has taken a toll on their mental health, according to a recent poll by the Kaiser Family Foundation.
Social isolation, loneliness, all of that is deeply connected to poor mental health outcomes. And the hardest hit are going to be folks like older adults that are living alone, children and teens, frontline workers.
As a result of the sharp incline in need, many therapists and mental health workers are now offering telehealth services, communicating through digital technology such as a computer tablet or smartphone.
We've switched almost everything to telehealth and virtual care video visits. We're back to back with patients and it's overwhelming.
Art therapist Julie Catelli says she is even using telehealth with her child patients who are also experiencing increased anxiety.
Connection is what makes us human. And it's what creates our lives. And all of these connections that we have outside of our home to friends and community and school and our job and our relatives has all kind of been diminished.
Since her job loss, Wong has been utilizing online therapy and says she sees no reason to go back to in-person visits.
A few years ago, I don't know if I would have been as open to an app or a Zoom call with a therapist. But now that I've done this, I really don't feel the need to go into an office to do it again.
I will say that the person who I'm seeing online, she's been really positive and given me a lot of tools to kind of help me during this time. So,
like having a regular routine and exercise, limiting exposure to the media, and connecting with others. Of course, not everyone has internet or is comfortable talking online, particularly older people, says Schmidt, and it can be pricey, even with insurance.
Actually, some of the folks that maybe are hardest hit, maybe there's no internet connection. Maybe they've had to shut their internet off. And with loss of insurance, right, we're seeing people lose their coverage.
There are some free support groups available online, like a Facebook group called the Free Public Support Group to manage coronavirus anxiety. For VOA News, Dina Mitchell, Oakland, California.
New York City is famous for its packed streets and subways. The city is now living through a transportation detox due to the coronavirus pandemic. COVID-19 has caused a true bicycle boom in the city as thousands of Big Apple residents swap their cars and subways for two wheels. Evgeny Maslov has the story, narrated by Anna Rice.
New York City streets, pre-coronavirus, were places where bikes had to share the road with cars and cabs. But because of present conditions, bikes have taken over Manhattan avenues and demand for them has been increasing.
We got big clientele. We used to work in different shops, but we see new faces. People started riding more to, you know, commuting. Yeah, I see that more. People started taking out the bikes out of the basements. That's good. So they can, you know, less traffic in the trains and less people in the, you know, like closer. So they have it socialized distance, you know.
Bikes are an attractive means of transport for many reasons. The cost. There is no problem with parking, and New York City has loads of bike repair shops. Those who still use the subway see ads encouraging them to respect social distancing rules. That's easy, though, because trains are mostly empty due to the mandatory lockdowns and businesses shifting to teleworking.
I'm a tiny bit more relaxed, but I'm still very careful because I know that we can't let our guard down. Even though I'm not wearing my mask right now, you'll notice.
I just walk. I don't take the subway anymore. So I just walk around my neighborhood. I walked here today from 91st Street. So.
Yeah, for sure. I haven't been in the subway since March 15th. No, 13th. March 13th.
As for the recent bike craze, it didn't happen overnight. It took people time to consider whether they even wanted to venture outside.
I feel like everyone was just kind of scared and staying indoors. Like, the end of April is when things really started to pick up. People want to avoid public transportation. It's a lot safer to go on a bike. And then also it's helped that the gyms are closed. So this is the only way that people can get, you know, exercise.
And for frontline workers, such as doctors and nurses, it's a less costly way for them to get to their jobs.
We have some nurses from out of states, so they've been using the bikes, which is great, and we're also providing them big discounts, so it helps them, it helps us.
If this bike trend sticks, Manhattan may never fully go back to transportation the way it was pre-coronavirus. For Evgeny Maslov in New York, Anna Rice, VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
It's well known that bees venture out to collect pollen from flowers and tree blossoms to provide food for members of their expansive colonies. But what happens when bumblebees have difficulty finding flowers or blooms on their target plants? A new Swiss-led study published in the journal Science suggests that when bumblebees find flowerless plants, they start to destructively munch on its leaves. According to the study, the way that the bumblebee nibbles on the leaves can cause their target plant or tree to bloom 2 weeks to a month earlier than usual. The relationship between flowering plants and bees are mutually beneficial. The bees need the pollen for food, and the plants need the bee pollinators in order to reproduce. It's no accident that plants bloom around the same time bees emerge from their winter hibernation. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. You can find us on Instagram and YouTube and at voanews.com. Thank you for joining us. Thanks to our managing editor, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, Amy Popapoon, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Have a wonderful day ahead.